Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 4th, 2017. And I am pleased to say that we are joined by a real live niece of her Uncle Sam, Miss Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
That's quite an introduction. I'm doing well.
And not only that, we are joined by a real live nephew of his Uncle Sam, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm glad to hear you're doing well, D.R. I'm glad you're on your equilibrium all the time. That's great. That's great. All right. So happy 4th of July. I still love my country, and I intend to make it a place that I can be proud of. That's my commitment. I'm sure you guys share that commitment here on the 4th of July. So, but there are a few items we have to clean up with. Clean up if we're going to be happy with the administration of our country. Let's just say that. So you've heard of a guy named Scott Pruitt. He is not quite the devil incarnate, but he's in league with some nasty people. He's running the EPA nowadays, and the EPA has been doing things, basically attacking science. And this past week, there was a House testimony that, well, tell me, Mariah, what happened with this woman named Swackhammer?
Right. So Deborah Swackhammer is the chair of the EPA's Board of Scientific Counselors and was going to give some testimony and was pressured by EPA to alter her testimony, which she did not do. She actually, you know, said she was there to give a warning about politicizing and marginalizing science. And she went ahead and gave that testimony exactly as she had been planning to give it before the pressure.
Wow. Do you have any idea? Yeah. I mean, what was the specifics of what were they? Do you know what they were trying to get her to change? I mean, it's probably arcane detail, but.
I know that. So I think that it was in some connection with her basic job is to sort of review science and make sure that the basic science that the EPA is supporting is sound. It's right. Good science. It's the right science. And then eventually that can be parlayed into legislation. And so,
they were trying to, D.R., do you know they were trying to knock people off that board, right? This BOSC, the Board of Scientific Counselors, you said, right, Mariah?
Group. They essentially said that there were 68 members on the board, and they were told a majority of those members were told they will not continue into a second term. So their numbers will be knocked down to 11 in September. And this Deborah Swackhammer essentially said that her office, which essentially legitimizes the science to make good decisions that will protect the health of people and our planet, she said they're in suspended animation right now, that all of their future meetings have been canceled because there's not enough committee members to attend the meetings. So this is the core body that looks at the science to make decisions about which chemicals we should be exposed to. And I think that it was in somewhat relation to the chlorpyrifos, which is a chemical applied to fruit, cherries, and apples.
Chlorpyrifos. And, wow.
Yeah.
You have to practice saying that, right? Say that three times fast.
Chlorpyrifos. Right. So it's been, the American Association of Pediatrics has said that the risk to infant and children's health and development is unambiguous. There's a wealth of science demonstrating the detrimental effects, and yet the EPA, the chemicals made by Dow Chemical, and the EPA is lifting the ban on this chemical. Mm-hmm. So it will be on our food going forward.
Or more importantly,
when it'll start. Our children's food, yeah. I don't know when it'll actually start, but.
Wow. So did you see that thing, DR? I mean, did you? What did you make of it?
Yes, it struck me as a more, to Mariah's point, it struck me as a more extreme version of some of the things that we've seen over the past few years of what my Dr. Michael Mann calls inconvenient science. In other words, when scientific findings go against certain political interests, the political interests try to shut up the scientists. We saw this back. We saw this for years with Jim Hansen, how, you know, both the Bush presidents, George H.W. and George W. Bush, tried to edit and censor Hansen's testimony to Congress. We saw this about 10 years ago. There was a famous I'm going to botch the person's name, so I won't pronounce it, but there was a famous scientist associated with the Centers for Disease Control mm-hmm. who basically had Dick Cheney edit up her testimony mm-hmm. that she was going to give to Congress. So there's a long and sordid history of these sort of political attacks on science, and Dr. Swackhammer is sort of the latest target of this. And it just goes to show you once again that, you know when How can you make America great again if you have no respect for science?
Well, I guess that's a question. I mean, you wonder if this, as you say, DR, the sort of this attack on science, attack on the truth, is it just this ad hoc, you know, throw everything at the opposition and, you know, see what happens? Or is there some theory to it? I mean, what do you think, Mariah? Do you think that there is something behind this, or is it just like crazy stuff that people are doing?
So if either of you have seen Merchants of Doubt, read the book mm-hmm. Merchants of Doubt by Naomi Oreskes or Eric Conway, or seen the movie, which is very compelling, they talk about this ideology of free market fundamentalism, mm-hmm. which has, you know, really all, they have a whole playbook of strategies where essentially you don't have to disprove the science, you just have to cast doubt on the science. And if you cast enough doubt on the science, then there becomes an argument over whether it really is detrimental, and it can stall action to regulate it. So, you know, this goes back to tobacco, whether tobacco was bad for your health, acid rain, the ozone hole.
I mean, the theory warming. That you don't have to prove anything, you just have to put up a lot of smoke.
Right, exactly. Even if there's great science, you just have to say, well, we don't know that the science is 100%. There's doubt.
Right.
And so when you create doubt, I mean, and it really comes down to regulation and the idea of maintaining free market fundamentalism,
which skews
public understanding.
But I guess I wonder sometimes. I mean, you look again, not to, you know, all roads lead to sort of Trumpism, right? But it seems like the truth in and of itself is held in low regard. The truth is something to be managed to some other purpose, right? The truth is not an end in itself. It's just something that you can step over, hide, or, you were saying before, Mariah, that authoritarian states will deliberately muddy the waters in order to just confuse people across a whole broad spectrum of things, right?
Yeah, and Terry Gross on NPR's Fresh Air did an interview with the British journalist Luke Harding, who said that the Kremlin will specifically squash domestic criticism and take over television to get a few people convinced of their lies, but really mostly to sort of promote some conspiracy theories and to really muddy the waters so that the public is confused about what the real truth is. And it just slows things down and allows some of these authoritarian regimes to get their message out there in a way that is.
Well, and what I saw something somewhere that said it was that the and I can't connect up the link, so, but it was this concept proposed by people in Russia, basically of a managed democracy, where you put out so much half-truth, innuendo, untruth, that most people just give up. They say, there is no truth. I'm never hearing anything that I can truly believe. They kind of withdraw from the process, and they vote, or they don't vote, but they consider everything corrupt anyway. And so basically, the people in charge get to run the show because everyone else is withdrawn from the field.
Well, yeah, and there's also this kind of like Hall of Mirrors thing where, you know, if one outlet says something, and then a lot of other outlets pick up that same message, and then it grows and grows and grows, eventually people say, well, I've heard that from a lot of different sources, mm-hmm. so it mm-hmm. must be true, even though it all traces back to one single source that just got echoed and reflected all over the place.
And it's funny you should say that, because I put up a link a couple weeks ago, and, well, I mean, I not that I me putting up a link matters much, but I read this article saying that if you, like, Google Trump, say, for example, what pops up to the top her is Breitbart and Daily Caller and InfoWars at the top of the Google list. And it's like three pages in, you get to the New York Times. And it's because the sort of the right side of the political world has figured out that if they have enough links and references and they make these references between themselves, that pushes it up the Google chain. And then what comes out at the top is the one that the search that is rewarded in Google is the one that has the most sort of independent references at other websites. So if you have 10 websites referencing each other continuously, then that pushes up these stories. I mean, it's the same kind of managed information flow.
And I don't have full details on this, but I remember hearing something about how if there are some stories that there enough of there's a controlling group of people that own enough of the media, and they can say, we want all of these stories run through every local media. And I don't know if you guys have heard about that. I wish I had better mm-hmm. details, but it's the kind of thing where people trust their local media mm-hmm. source. And if there's a story that's getting pushed through every single local media, people will
accept
it, adhere to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's go ahead, dear.
I was going to say, Mariah's referencing the Sinclair broadcasting controversy, where, you know, this is Sinclair is basically a Fox News Jr., but it has a lot of control over a lot of localized news. Mm-hmm. And going all the way back to the 2004 presidential election, there have been numerous controversies surrounding these sort of, you know, skewed, ridiculously right-wing local news stories that they do. And now they bought out, I think, Tribune Media, mm-hmm. and they're going about the business of sort of, you know, on local news stations, just, you know, promoting the Trump glorification agenda, basically.
And it's a high percentage, isn't it? Like 70% or something that they have control over? I don't know if that's accurate. But.
It is a significant percentage. I'm not sure of the specific amount, but it is a fairly large amount from what I understand.
But, I mean, I think we're in a new age where, I mean, the sort of machinations underlying Google that you are completely innocent of is what determines what you see. I mean, the same on Facebook. This does relate to climate in the sense that what gets pushed up and what gets pushed down, what gets into the national dialogue is driven by this sort of algorithms that are tuned by people with God knows what purposes. And I mean, the more you're aware of that, I guess maybe what I would say is that just because your climate change story isn't the first thing, and when you type in climate change, all you see is a bunch of hokum of denier people. Well, there's a reason for that, and you shouldn't take it as of the validation or the invalidation of your interest in finding real facts, I suppose, right? Mm. I don't know. Maybe we need to have a course in how to manage your Google feed, right?
How to make climate videos go viral.
Right. I mean, we've talked a lot about DR and I have agonized in the past about the epistemological bubble, right? I mean, are we getting sort of a select set of information, and, you know, what websites do we go to? And, you know, maybe I think that the more you're aware of it, the more you're aware of the limitations on your information stream, the better off you are. And you can... you can manage it. No.
Right.
Who knows? Well, I tell you what. I think what we ought to do is put it down there. What I wanted to do is take the opportunity to remind folks about the opportunities for interesting summertime tours that can happen if you go to the MCAN website. There's several different tours that are coming. One is a tour, actually two opportunities, on the 15th of July and the 7th of August to tour the Distillery North Apartments in South Boston. It's an amazing, interesting place with extremely high energy efficiency. It's an artist colony. It's in South Boston, which is really a cool place to go. It's a great thing. Check it out on the MCAN website. On July 27th, there will be a tour of the Kendall Cogeneration Station. Cogeneration being the utilization of the heat that comes off your electric generator to do some other useful thing and improves the efficiency of your whole system. So that cogeneration state, Kendall Square. Who doesn't like Kendall Square, right? It's a nice place to visit. And finally, the Deer Island Clean Energy Tour. Deer Island, if you don't know, is the place with the two huge bubbles that and the wind turbines that you see across the well, certainly I do, since I usually come up from the south, right? Maybe if you come from the north, you get a different view. But the Deer Island sewage treatment facility is a renewable energy marvel. It does great things for the city of Boston, has helped to clean up the Boston Harbor. It's a fascinating tour, and you can take that on August 16th. But if you do want to do that, you need to sign up with MCAN in advance because there's some state of Massachusetts paperwork you need to sign off. By the way, if any of those tours, if you want to bring your city officials along, someone from your town council, we'd love to have you. Love to have you there. By the way, at the at the Net Zero apartment building on Saturday, July 15th, I will be there in person to greet you. So please make a point of coming, and I'll be taking the tour myself, and would love to see you there. So let's just remind everybody, we'll put links to all that stuff in the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find this podcast on our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc. And of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Enjoy your fireworks.
You guys take care. Hey, everybody, have a great 4th of July. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.